Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. People will have to bear with me. I've got some seriously clogged sinuses. So we've wrapped up our work year. We're going into the winter retreat, starting a full schedule in a couple of days. And today is Lungpa Pasano's 40th bhikkhu birthday. So I was thinking a little bit about gratitude to teachers, but for some reason the mind was more going to gratitude to the inner teacher, because no matter how much our teachers tell us or teach us or guide us, it's really up to us to penetrate through our own ignorance. The teacher only points the way, so it's up to our inner teacher it's just mindfulness, just coming back to mindfulness. Just learning to see what's causing disease in the body and mind, what causes happiness in the body and mind. And the heart has a, it's as if the heart has a thick crust of delusion around it, of a thick crust of wrong views, wrong assumptions, mistaken ways of seeing things, which causes that disease, dissatisfaction to arise again and again. And so to counteract that, then again and again we have to be meditating, training ourselves, doing the contemplations, just doing that basic bare bones work of the practice, and just doing it again and again. And just cultivating that mindfulness so that little by little we can be picking away at that crust around the heart. And the mind itself has to see that something is going to be beneficial for it before it really goes in that direction. And that's why I think training the mind is so difficult. There's one place in the suttas where the Buddha says that if the mind hasn't seen a higher happiness, it'll go for the lower happiness that it already knows. So if the mind hasn't had the absorptions or deep states of peace, then it'll just by default go in the direction of sensuality. It'll take what it can get. And that's why the training is difficult, because there's that interim period whereby the mind hasn't experienced those higher states of happiness, and yet we have a sense that they exist. And so we want to train ourselves to go in that direction, and yet the mind, in and of itself, still wants to go the other direction. It's still in the stream of the world. It's still moving in that direction, and yet there's another part of ourselves which wants to move in the direction of the Dhamma. And it's kind of fascinating that we have that intention to move in the direction of the Dhamma, even though the heart is still moving in the direction of the world. There's something inside of us which sees the benefit. And the Buddha also said that if one doesn't see Nibbana as the highest happiness, then it's impossible that one will attain it. So that, so a large part of the practice is just convincing the heart of the truth of these things so that it does move in that direction. And because the heart has that thick crust around it, it does take a lot of convincing. It take a long time to curb the momentum that's been moving towards the world for so long. I think one of the things that drew me to this group, not just Buddhism, but this, the Ajahn Chah group in particular, is as a teenager and growing up, kind of searching around for different things and dabbling in different types of spirituality, but seeing very clearly that sometimes the teachings were really good, but then whenever I had met someone who could be a mentor or kind of delve deeper into a certain religion, I could see that there was some sort of selfishness involved on the part of that person or that religion. It's more, it's gaining adherents, gaining devotees for the sake of worldly gain, for the sake of money, for the sake of some sort of praise or fame. And that was very disheartening. And that's just the way of the world. It's a dog-eat-dog world, so whether it's the corporate world or the religious world, it's everybody trying to get something for themselves. And then it was very heartening to come here and to see, not just here, but also reading the life story of the Buddha and seeing that there is such a thing as people who really do things from a place of selflessness and compassion, and that really does exist in the world. I think when I was 18, 19 years old, I was starting to think that maybe that doesn't exist in the world. But seeing that the eight worldly winds, those are the very things that the Buddha was contemplating sitting under the Bodhi tree, and those are the very things he was trying to overcome. So these are great hindrances. And these things are making the world go round. But it does happen that there's people who genuinely do want to help others without any thought of gaining for themselves. And that's very rare in the world. And the Buddha himself, when he's, they say he sat on eight bundles of kusa grass, and Ajahn Chah would draw the parallel that these are a simile for the eight worldly winds, for gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, pleasure and pain, the things that stir the mind to go in its different directions. And so the Buddha is just sitting on those eight worldly winds under the Bodhi tree until he attained enlightenment, until he transcended them. And then proceeding to teach the Dhamma to the world, the truth that is beyond those worldly winds, the Four Noble Truths. There's suffering, there's the cause of suffering, which is desire and attachment. There's an ending of suffering, which comes from relinquishment, letting go. And there is a Noble Eightfold Path leading to the complete cessation of that suffering. There is a way of living which moves one in the direction of that complete cessation of suffering. And so he did that out of the purest form of compassion, not seeking any sort of worldly gain or benefit for himself, but purely out of wanting to help others wanting to see others have less suffering. And yet it's so easy for those worldly winds to creep in. It's good to ask oneself if how pure is the intention with what I'm doing. So is it for some sort of praise? Is it for some sort of having a better reputation? Is it for some sort of pleasure? Is it for some sort of gain, material gain, worldly gain? Is what I'm doing to try to avoid any sort of discomfort, pain, trying to avoid any sort of blame? The mind in itself is habituated to moving according to these worldly winds. So it's constantly wanting to move away from pain, loss, you know, disrepute, blame, constantly wanting to move away from those things, not wanting to contact those things, and wanting to move towards praise, pleasure, gain, fame. These are the things that are blowing the mind back and forth in samsara. And so just coming back to mindfulness, just seeing that process happening and seeing that it's a cycle, it's never ending. It just goes on and on until we pierce through and have some sort of perspective. Until we cultivate right view, we start to see that anything that's pleasant, that kind of happiness, is fleeting, impermanent. And so when it happens, it is genuine happiness, but it's very, very short-lived. And so we start to see that there is something more than that. It's easy to tell ourselves, well, that's all I can get. So, you know, I might as well just go for that worldly happiness and that's it, and I'm not able to get much else. So it's good enough and I'll just settle for that. But then when we come to the practice, we have an intuition or an inkling that there is something greater than that. And perhaps a lot of us have had that experience of coming to the meditation practice and experiencing a kind of peace and happiness which we never thought was possible. And so when that happens, then that really sticks in the heart, and the mind can remember that, and that can become a refuge. And it's really important to have at least a little bit of that experience. There might be a lot of craving and attachment, wanting to get back to it. Might even become depressed, thinking, oh, that was amazing, and that kind of peace and happiness, I haven't had it before, and now I want it again, but it's not coming back. But we have to be patient, because that kind of longing and desire and attachment, that's something which is obstructing that peace and happiness. And so this is the kind of peace and happiness which comes from letting go, which comes from not wanting things to be other than what they are. And the training for the mind and the cultivation of mindfulness is just being content with the way things are. But there's also a balance, because there is a cultivation and there is a direction we're moving in. And with the cultivation of precepts and the practicing of meditation over and over again, morning and evening chanting, day in, day out, morning and evening meditation, and the practice periods, the intermittent periods during the day, there is a ripening and a deepening. But during those practice periods, to be really focused on the present moment and to know what's happening, and to be clear about what our hindrances are, and to be clear about where we're at, where we're going. To know ourselves well, know our limitations. To know how much sitting meditation is going to be helpful for us. To know how much walking meditation. To know how much to work and sacrifice for the sake of the Sangha, but also to know when to set that work aside. To know what's right for our temperament. To know what agrees with us at the meal. How much sleep we need. Just to know what's right for our cultivation and what's going to make the mind bright. And then at each of the periods of the day, whether it's the meal, a chanting, or a meditation session, or going to sleep for the night, to taking a rest, then to know what's happening in the mind. Even to know if there's confusion present, or there's just lots of thoughts, lots of different thoughts that are swirling around. And just to know that and be present for it. Because whether the mind is peaceful or not peaceful, or whether it's happy or sad or whatever is happening in the mind, we can be present for that and we can learn from it. Disease, dissatisfaction, where did that come from? What happened today that maybe brought that up? So seeing the causes, looking for the causes of things. And this is all just part of the contemplation, part of the mindfulness training. There's a interesting sutta where Ananda, Venerable Ananda, is receiving lay people throughout the day, throughout the afternoon, into the evening. He's receiving a large group of lay people, and he's quite busy. And at the end of the day, Mahakasapa, the ascetic, comes and kind of points out to Venerable Ananda, you shouldn't be engaging in all of these duties, but you should be practicing meditation and not being so stirred up by these worldly folk. And Venerable Ananda thanks Mahakasapa for that pointing out. And then the Buddha hears about this and calls Mahakasapa to him and says, Mahakasapa, don't criticize Ananda for doing those duties for the Sangha. Ananda has great merit, has great punya, and merit is synonymous with happiness. And so not to belittle acts of merit. And then Ananda, after that, is telling a group of his students that Mahakasapa is his teacher and the gratitude he has for Mahakasapa. And so there's several things happening there. One is Mahakasapa's wanting Ananda to get back to the practice. And so that's out of compassion for Ananda. Yet Ananda's been receiving people all day, largely so that they don't have to, that the Buddha doesn't have to be bothered with them. And so he's expending his energy and effort in a service to the Sangha, receiving people. And And the Buddha praises Ananda for this, for putting forth that kind of effort and for that cultivation of merit, of punya. And at the same time, Ananda is incredibly grateful that Mahakasapa reminded him to come back to the practice, to come back to the meditation practice. And lets his students know that Mahakasapa, he considers Mahakasapa to be his teacher. So what I take from this, it's very relevant going into the winter retreat. Many of us have been working. We spend 9 months of the year outside of winter retreat, so we've had our work periods, and looking after the monastery. There's been a beginning the building of the reception hall. So a lot of people have made sacrifices for the sake of the Sangha. And, that's a cultivation of great punya. Especially those who make great sacrifices for the Sangha, go the extra mile, like the guest monk or the work monk or the abbot, or others who have been taking on extra duties. Now is the time that we can come back to the meditation, the winter retreat. There's a place in the suttas where the Buddha says that if one is doing great service for the Sangha, then that's fine and good, but one always keeps it in the back of one's mind, the true sake for the ordination. And then when the opportunity presents itself, then immediately coming back to the striving for the goal, striving for the Dhamma. So we have this time coming up to the winter retreat to, in Thai they say a bumpen bhavana. It's like we get to take care of our bhavana, take care of our cultivation, and give importance to looking after our practice. It is interesting, in the Vinaya, there's something about the allotment of dwelling places, and in general it goes by seniority. But then first pick of dwelling places goes to Padimokkha chanters, and then so even a junior Padimokkha chanter can take a dwelling place over a senior non-Padimokkha chanter, according to the Vinaya. And then also, after that first pick of dwelling places goes to those who do great service for the Sangha. And so that actually doesn't come up so much here, because many of the monks in the Sangha here are Padimokkha chanters, and everybody is doing great service for the Sangha, so we don't take that one into account so much here. It seems to work just going by seniority. But it is interesting that the Buddha gives importance to those things. But now this time coming up, we have time to go inward and to try and see more clearly what is really going on in the mind, in the heart, and to really try to see what direction the mind is moving in. And if it is moving in the direction of the world, to do what we can to curb that and steer that momentum away from the direction of worldliness and towards the direction of the Dhamma, towards the stream of the Dhamma. And to really get to a place where we're giving importance to having a clean heart and to where the mind sees that Nibbana is the highest happiness, that this is the direction that we want to be moving in. And then little by little, that crust of delusion that's been caked onto the heart for so long can fall away. And then the heart that's bright can shine through. And then no matter who we are, we have the opportunity for this to happen. And also no matter what our abilities are, whether we can sit for a long time or we're not able to sit for a long time, man, woman, we all have equal opportunity to lessen our greed, hatred, and delusion and move in the direction of the Dhamma. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Sadhu.